Today's poll, our last speaker, well actually not the last one, Lorette will have concluding remarks. So very last full speaker, I should say, is Professor Paul Thomason. Paul is a professor of agricultural economics at McGill, and the title of his presentation is Computable General Equilibrium Modeling of a Healthy Diet.
Okay, thank you very much. Since I'm the last speaker of the day, we'll try and keep it short. I changed the title of my presentation to The Macroeconomic Impacts of Healthy Eating. Before we go where we're going to go today, I just thought I'd give you a little snapshot of sort of the roadmap that we're going to go. We're going to talk a little bit about the problems, some objectives. We're going to look at the experimental design that we're going to use to look at the macroeconomic impacts or how to estimate the macroeconomic impacts of a healthy diet. We'll say something about how we've done some of the initial scenario development. We have some preliminary results that we've run through a CGE model or computable general equilibrium model. And we'll talk about the research agenda that we plan to take over the next 3 or 4 years. So in terms of the things that we want to look at is, as economists, we look at the impact of obesity in a number of ways. But one of the things that we look at is sort of individual microbehavior in terms of household expenditures. One of the things that we look at is that as household income increases, this has an impact on sort of what your food expenditures are and what your consumption is going to be. And again, what we see is as that income increases, we have a change in patterns in terms of our food consumption. One of the things that we've seen in Canada is that as income has increased, we see that food consumption has been identified as a risk factor in the prevalence of obesity. And again, this has associated with a number of health problems, including such things as cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer. So one of the things that we have to take into account is that we have to recognize that there's this relationship between household income and how we spend our money, and how does that influence kind of the potential health problems we're going to run into. So one of the things that people always talk about, and if you talk to people at Health Canada, they'll say, well, what we have to do is start promoting a healthy diet. So one of the things, there's a potential solution here, is this idea is if we could only get Canadians to adopt to a healthy diet. But the problem with that is that it's hard to go to a government agency or to policymakers and say, look, you know what, we want to do some health promotion work here and we want people to eat better. And they'll say, well, that's really great, but how do we know we're going to get real value for our money? And, you know, how you got to give us some economic evidence. If we're going to invest money in this, you're going to have to give us some economic evidence that it actually is going to be a worthwhile in terms of an investment. What we see in sort of traditional economic analysis and health economics, it's been sort of focused on partial equilibrium models. And by partial equilibrium models, what we normally talk about is we will take one market and we'll assume everything else will remain the same and we'll make a change in that market and we'll see what the impact is. So often you'll see things such as, let's put on a fat tax, okay? So we'll say we've got certain food products that are fatty, we're going to put on a tax, we're going to assume everything else stays the same, and we're going to look at what that impact is going to be. And normally when they do their analysis in this way, they look at sort of what is the impact of something like a fat tax on, let's say, individual income. You may have some question in here. If we're looking at obesity, sort of what would be the impact on medical expenses if people become either more obese or less obese? We normally look at society's healthcare costs, and normally what the idea behind it, a lot of this analysis, is what is the cost effectiveness of having this promotion program or policy? What we're going to try and do here is look at the problem in a very different light from an economic point of view. We're going to move away from looking at simply partial equilibrium models where we're keeping everything the same and changing one thing in one market to a general equilibrium situation. And when we talk about general equilibrium systems in a macroeconomic sense, what we're looking at is we're looking at sort of the interrelationships between households, government expenditures, and industrial sectors. And so the idea behind it is we're going to shift the analysis away from sort of just concentrating on the individual and a single market to multiple markets, multiple countries, and multiple policies. So again, the problem is sort of what is the macroeconomic impacts of adopting a healthier diet for the Canadian economy. So in order to do this, if we were going to do this, this is sort of a research agenda that we'd want to take into account. We'd want to look at sort of what were the changes, what would be the changes in consumption patterns of households. What happens if we could actually have that promotion program that would actually get Canadians to change their eating habits so that they actually ate healthier? So we'd want to look at what would be the impact on the demand for products from agriculture and agri-food sectors. Obviously, if Canadians were to adopt Health Canada's healthy diet, we'd eat a lot more fruit and vegetables, we'd have more dairy products, we'd have less meats. So, and we'd change the grains that we'd be eating. So that's sort of what's going to happen if we were to adopt such a policy. Again, this is going to have an impact on trade because a lot of our fruits and vegetables come from other countries. So the model or the simulation that we want to look at has to take into account sort of what are the trade rules that we have and how is trade going to impact on this adoption of a healthier diet. The other thing is we have to look at is that if Canadians start to eat healthier, then that's going to have an impact on labor productivity. So in other words, people are going to live longer, so maybe our labor force is going to increase in size. But people are going to live without disease for a longer period of time. So there's going to be less absenteeism and less stress in terms of work-related problems. This is going to increase the efficiency of the economy. And the increase in efficiency isn't going to simply be in a sector, but in all sectors of the economy, because as individuals go from being obese to less obese or to being healthy, then no matter what industrial sector they're going to work in, it's going to have an impact on the productivity of that sector. So if we were to actually get Canadians to adopt a healthier diet, we'd have increase in efficiency and competitiveness within our industrial sectors. And then finally, it would have an impact on public expenditures in terms of health care costs. And so what we would have is we would have a shifting from current health care costs that deal with problems of obesity, things like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and maybe they would spend it in other health care costs, maybe for more geriatrics or other health care issues, or maybe they would spend them on other things, you know, fighter jets or whatever governments like to spend their things on. So the idea behind it is that the analysis itself would want to take into account all of those impacts, because if you're going to go and sit down and talk to a government decision maker, if you go to the federal cabinet table and say, look, this is what we want to do, they're going to sit down and they're going to ask you some tough questions about how is it going to be good for the economy. They're simply not going to say, geez, how many more lives are you going to save, or how much healthier are people going to be? Because, you know, eventually somebody's going to, at the table, is going to stand up there and say, look, this is a personal choice. If people are obese, they did it themselves. So, you know, should we actually deal with it? What we're trying to do is provide an economic argument for them to actually promote and get Canadians to adopt a healthier diet. So the experimental design we're going to use is what we call a counterfactual example. So what we're going to do is we're going to compare what we call business as usual, which is simply if we kept the obesity rates and trends that we have today in terms of disease and obesity going out into the future, and we're going to compare that with a population that was healthier. And what we want to do is see what would be the change in terms of economics of actually the change to a healthier diet. So again, things that we have to identify, we have to estimate the changes in domestic consumption. So first of all, you would have a change in sort of agriculture and food commodities. people would decrease their health expenditures. So if you decrease your health expenditures, you don't have to buy as many pills or pharmaceutical products. You've got extra money you can spend on other things. Maybe it's a color TV. Maybe it's going out and buying a new bike. There's a lot of things you could spend it on. And again, if you're healthier and you're not missing as many days at work, you're going to also increase your income, and that's going to start changing your expenditure pattern also. Again, we would also have to estimate the impact on individual health in terms of changes of years of life lived and years of life lived with disability. A lot of health people, they hang on those two factors, and they use that to promote why we should adopt a healthier diet. From an economic perspective, or the perspective we're going to take here, is that we're looking at those things to see what is that the impact of those two factors on economic development into the future. So again, things we want to include, when we do the complete analysis, these are the things we're going to include. We're going to have a change in the domestic consumption of agriculture and food commodities. We want to look at the change of imports and exports. Again, originally we're going to emphasize changes in agricultural and food products, but again, changes in imports and exports are going to also be impacted by increased incomes that households would have. We'd have changes in health expenditures, both by the individual, so they would decrease their health expenditures and again spend their money on other things. We'd have increases in disposable income. We'd have an increase in labor supply, increase in labor productivity, and we'd have a change in government expenditures. All of these things would have to be analyzed and incorporated in the economic analysis to actually take into account the impact of adopting a healthier diet. So what is general equilibrium theory? Basically, it explains the behavior of supply and demand and prices in an economy with several markets. So basically, within the modeling structure that we use, we have industrial sectors. All of the industrial sectors in Canada are covered. We have demand in terms of household demand and government demand for commodities. And we basically have different countries and trade between them. And what we're able to do, we are able to simulate all of these economies and actually bring the economies back into equilibrium. This is important because when we bring the economies back into equilibrium, that will start to change the price of commodities. So, for example, if Canadians consume a lot more fruits and vegetables, that could actually impact the price, not only in Canada, but it could actually impact the price on the world market. So again, what our model tries to do is take into account what are those changes in prices, because those changes in prices are going to impact individual and household behavior. So we're using what is called the Global Trade Analysis Project modeling framework, and again, it includes industrial sectors, includes households, governments, and global sectors that go across countries. All of the countries and regions in the model are linked through trade. We have prices and quantities are simultaneously determined in both factor markets and commodity markets. By commodity markets, all the goods that are traded in the economy, they go into equilibrium. And factors include things such as labor, capital, natural resources, and land. So all of these things will actually go back into equilibrium when we start to simulate our model. So the modeling framework includes 57 commodities or industrial sectors and 113 countries or regions. What I'm going to show you right now is a preliminary simulation that we've done for the Public Health Agency of Canada. Again, we have 57 industrial sectors in the model and 9 regions in the model. And we're looking at the consumption of 3 categories of foods, fruits and vegetables, dairy products, and meat products. So what we're looking at here is we took the Canadian Food Guide, and we were basically looking at what was the consumption patterns of Canadians today in terms of these 3 categories of foods, and we compared them to what Canadians should have consumed if they were eating a healthier diet as defined by the Canadian Food Guide, Healthy Food Guide. Okay, so I'm giving you 2 scenarios here. The scenarios are based on 2 sets of different data that were generated by scientists who were actually studying consumption patterns of Canadians over time. And basically, one scenario estimated that fruit and vegetable consumption, in order to go from the current diet to a healthy diet, we would have to increase our fruit and vegetable consumption by 35%. We'd have to increase our dairy product consumption by 46%, and we would have to decrease our meat consumption by 43%. So this is how we're going to actually start to stimulate the model. We're actually going to start to now say, okay, if we did adopt this diet, what would happen to the Canadian economy? In the second scenario, which is just a different set of statistical estimates, we have fruit and vegetable consumption would increase by 50%, dairy product consumption would increase by 41%, and meat consumption would decrease by 20%. Here's the important things. When we're looking at the Canadian economy, we can say that if you adopted a healthier diet, it would be good for the overall economy. We would see that GDP, no matter which scenario you looked at, would increase in both scenarios. And that gross domestic product is an indicator of economic growth. And basically, you're saying that if we could just get Canadians to eat healthier, it would be good for all industrial sectors in our economy. In terms of industrial output, we would have an increase in our industrial output, and we'd also have an increase in household income. So for three indicators that economists would like to use to actually identify whether or not a program is actually going to be good for an economy, we could give them some indicators that, yes, that if you were to adopt a healthier diet within Canada, it would be good in terms of these three factors or indicators in terms of the economy. Now, the model allows us to break down a whole series of indicators. It allows us to look at imports and exports from Canada and other countries. It allows us to break down the industrial sectors of Canada and identify which industrial sectors are going to benefit from the adoption of a healthier diet and which industrial sectors would actually lose from the adoption of a healthier diet. Obviously, if you're in the livestock or cattle industry, it's not going to be a good day for you in the future. If you're in fruit and vegetables, it would be. But we're able to actually give a distribution of the impacts across industrial sectors in Canada. This informs policymakers in the sense that it allows them to be able to think about not only the impact of the policies on the country in its totality, but also to look at what impacts are going to be harmed and whether or not there should be interventions to assist in the transition from out of different industrial sectors. The model also allows us to look at the impacts on other countries. So if Canada were to adopt a healthier diet, countries such as Mexico and the United States would also have an increase in their GDP. They increase their GDP even though their country themselves does not change their consumption patterns. They have an increase in GDP because they're now exporting a lot more fruits and vegetables to Canada. So again, one of the things that we want to do in this analysis is we want to be able to look at the distribution of impacts between countries. We want to look at the distribution of impacts between industrial sectors and within the country as a whole. Right now, we've just started with the static analysis, and we've only looked at that one indicator of the change in the diet itself. If we start to look at the other indicators, increase in household income because less absenteeism, again, that's going to actually increase the economic impact on the economy in a positive way. If you start to look at decreased expenditures on medicines, it means that we will actually impact certain industrial sectors, some like pharmaceuticals, will have a negative impact, but other industrial sectors would have a positive impact. We're going to be doing a dynamic analysis. Right now, we're just assuming that all Canadians adopted a healthier diet at one point instantaneously. One of the things that we're going to be doing is a dynamic analysis over a 30-year period to see how, as you have different changes in the obesity rate over Canada, how does that impact the economy over time. this ties into some of the work that Jerome has been doing, in that Jerome has been looking, will be looking at sort of what are those driving forces and what are the different policies and how will it impact the time dimension. I will be able to use his work to actually simulate in my policy model. Again, one of the things we've done here is we just said, okay, let's have Canadians eat healthier. But the model can actually be used to look at potential programs that would actually make that happen. So we could look at school lunch programs. We could look at a variety of different promotional type programs that would actually get Canadians to eat healthier. That's it.
Questions in the audience?
Thank you for your presentation. It's very informative. It's a question about like within country differences in the way certain groups might consume, in this case, fruits versus vegetables. I know that there's some work looking at differences in fruit and vegetable consumption in China, where high-income Chinese residents tend to prefer fruits as opposed to vegetables. And I'm just wondering if this modeling procedure might take into account those cases where it's higher income groups that might, you know, be more, you know, might uptake a program like this compared to low income groups, so that you have a slightly, your final picture has, you know, adjusted for those within group differences and how the policy might be uptake.
Yeah. Great question. Just so happens that that's one of the next steps we're taking. Right now we have an average household consumption function in the model. Right, about the plan is to break that average consumption function down by household income category and by different groups, rural or urban potentially, and then to be able to identify how does consumption patterns change by income group or by spatial location, and also to look at how does the impact of a policy may impact certain income groups differently than other income groups.
Any questions?
I just have a question on taking into consideration, say, job loss for people that are healthier. You're now going to work all the time, so your temporary employee that used to fill in for you has no longer got a job. Your fast food joint is losing money. They're not paying taxes because we're eating healthier. So there's job loss there. Yeah. Like, are those factors also taken in?
Yeah, I could have put the employment statistics up also. Basically, the importance behind having a general equilibrium model, we're able to model all sectors of the economy, and we're able to actually identify where you're going to have job losses and where you're going to have job gains. And you also can take into account tax implications. So, you know, McDonald's isn't making as much corporate tax, therefore there's less tax going there, but farmers are making more taxes, and therefore they're... So all of that is accounted for within the modeling system itself.
I have a question, Paul. Scenario methods appear to be, that's just my personal impression, more popular in Europe in policy making, perhaps less so in North America. What's your personal view in that sense, the future of, let's say, or the futures of scenario methods in policy making in Canada and North America in general?
When I used to work for the federal government, yes, we used to use scenario analysis quite a bit. So we used to build, we had a whole series of both microeconomic, macroeconomic modeling systems and trade modeling systems that would actually allow us to actually put programs in and look at economic impacts from programs and things like that. So it is used. The government has lost a lot of capabilities, sort of the intellectual capital to keep that going. One of the things that we have found out, though, is that many of the different ministries, in particular, let's say, agriculture, they utilize economic modeling systems and simulation as a way to get their policies through cabinet, in that they're able to use this to not only show the benefit for agriculture, but other industrial sectors. Other departments don't use it as well.
I guess I was coming more with my personal bias from an emerging health technologies point of view, where we really more at the upstream stage, and when the future or futures are still in the making. Some would claim that being aware of a multiplicity of futures is one way of sort of being better equipped to deal with the whatever may come in the future, and that might actually feed into a more sustainable way of developing. In other words, what we see in technology development is that sort of technologies tend to lock in into certain deterministic features, at least in people's minds. If you can break that kind of cognitive lock in and be more cognizant of multiple futures, that might be sort of one way of developing in a more sustainable manner. At least some sort of suggest that. So that's why I asked that question, using scenario methods for emerging technologies.
They do that also. So, for example, there's quite a bit of work being done right now to look at sort of second generation biofuels, for example, and with multiple technologies and multiple sort of feedstock inputs. Again, one of the things that we try to do here is, at one time you used to only model one program or one policy at a time. Now we tend to try to model or analyze portfolios of policies, and the same thing in terms of portfolios of innovations and portfolios of futures. So it's much more of a much more dynamic or robust analysis.
Yeah, I think along this line, I think where it needs to be happening more and early involvement of stakeholder in addition to modeling is in the context of obesity, when everybody talks about adding LT policies in all sectors. I think that that's why if you look at the whole portfolio of models that we went through today, it is very critical that you look at health within the context of all those other of the actual strategic outcome and process of all those other sectors. And that's why I think that's very important. We just hosted Health Canada is currently engaging into a foresight process of health system that could be sustainable for the Canadian in 2030, and they take very much this what we call the multi-actor health ecosystem, so that you cannot just look at healthcare and universal access and so on without looking at what society does, both in terms of society and technology, both in terms of increasing the resources of health and healthcare, but also not feeding the pipeline into disease too fast through the lifestyle that we have. And I think that that's very much when all those models together would be very important.
Just if I may add to that, there has been a long sort of divide between fact and value, and science has been framed as a value-neutral autonomous activity, which is really not the case. Science is always influenced by social systems. It's embedded in a social system. So I think that's one advantage of engaging early on, so that those divides are sort of examined more critically on the porous nature. Are there any final questions or comments from Paul?
Yeah. I have a question. Thank you for your talk. I thought it was very, very, very interesting. I was intrigued by the selection of your object of economic analysis, and your object is the promotion of fruits and vegetable consumption. You could have chosen a different kind of intervention. There's a lot of interest in taxing fats or taxing sugars. Was that a consideration when you were given your mandate? Like, did you consider other options of health promotion interventions, and why did you? What were your consideration in selecting vegetable and fruit consumption?
Okay, this is only the start. Okay, so this is not the end. This is just the start. One of the things that we wanted to look at was simply what would be the counterfactual example, or how would consumption change if we ate healthy. I didn't say how we were going to get healthy. I just said we're all going to eat from what the healthy eating guide says. Canadians aren't eating enough fruit and vegetables. We're not having enough dairy products, and we eat too much meat. So I'm just saying, okay, what is the economic impact of doing that? Your question comes 4 years from now or 3 years from now. when we sit down and we say, okay, in order to get people to eat healthier, what are the policies that we need to introduce to get them to do that? Some of those policies may be, let's say, a fat tax, or maybe a tax on sugar going into soft drinks. There's a bunch of different things that we can use, policy levers, that we can use to actually get people to eat healthier. We haven't done that yet. Right now, what I'm trying to convince the government to do is that eating healthy is good for the economy. Then the next question they should come back and ask us is, how do we get there? And that would be using some of the work that Jerome has done and some of the work that Yuma has done, is to say, okay, you know, if we know that people have these attributes that they value, how do we get them to recognize those attributes? Maybe it's an informational problem. Maybe Jerome can sit down and say, okay, here are the barriers that would get one policy not to work while another policy would work. So those things all have to work together, and that's in terms of the policy scenario, which comes later on, is we're going to be introducing all of those different things.
Well, thank you, Paul, for a really interesting talk. I guess the international part will come later, as you say.
Yep.
We're almost